Thank you so much. Good morning. As we know, I think most of the things that we do Pesach night, or most of the blatant aspects of the Seder, can you hear? Is that clear? Most of the major components of the Seder have their roots in Torah law, for the most part. Doesn't necessarily mean that nowadays, in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, that they are actually Doraisas, but they are rooted in concepts we find in the Torah. Matzah, and the Haggadah, and Maror, these are all rooted in experiences from the Torah. The four cups of wine, however, is in a different category. Four cups of wine is a rabbinical enactment. That's a Din D'Rabbanan. It's part of the grouping that we're familiar with of Persumei Nisa. So therefore, it's really more appropriately grouped with Purim and Pesach, which are themselves rabbinical holidays, which are in the service of publicizing miracles of Persumei Nisa. So the four cups of wine really belong with that group, even though they're associated with a yontif that is itself deraisa. So even though they're basically rabbinically oriented, nonetheless, we do find roots in the Chumash for the four cups of wine. The Psukim and Parshas Va'era tell us the four languages of redemption, called the four Lashonos of Geula, V'hoseisi, V'hitzalti, V'ga'alti, V'lakachti, four different action verbs used in connection with our redemption. Four different ideas, as the Ramban explains, and I think the Ramban is here on the Mara Makoma sheet. These four ideas represent four different aspects of what was going on. That Vahotzesi, it's the last thing on the Mara Makoma sheets, that we were actually taken out of Egypt, is Vahotzesi. Vihitzalti, we were made free, not just physically removed, but we were given our freedom. Vigaalti, that Mitzrayim was dealt with. It's not enough for us to be free, but the Egyptians had to know also that we were freed. And Vilakachti, and we were brought ultimately to Har Sinai. So these four different stages of our redemption are represented by these four languages of Geula, these four Lashonos of Geula. And the Talmud Yerushalmi in Maseches Pesachim says, how do we know that there is an idea of four cups of wine on Pesach? What's it meant to represent? It's meant to represent these four Lashonos of Geula, these four languages of redemption. So that really prompts a question that we could talk about in a kind of a theoretical sense. This is a topic that many Acharonim discussed, perhaps most prominently the Brisker Rav, or Velvel Soloveitchik, or Soloveitchik's uncle, in his work on the Rambam, and many others after him discussed this question as well in different formulations. The basic issue being, what exactly are we looking for? What exactly are we trying to accomplish with the four cups of wine? Because we could see it in perhaps two distinct ways. On the one hand, what we could have here, especially on the heels of Purim, is what basically boils down to a mitzvah of drinking. That perhaps Chazal asked for us to have drinking as associated with our Pesach experience, that drinking is a way of showing our freedom. In fact, the Mordechai, one of the Rishonim, asks in the back of the Gemara, it's interesting, if you want to have four, so let's have four pieces of meat. I wouldn't argue. Why can't we have four pieces of meat as an aspect of the Seder? So later Svarim suggests, and the Netziv writes like this, in his commentary on Chumash, that wine is important because wine is transformative. Wine gives us a different type of mindset, and if the idea is we're talking about four distinct phases, so we want to have four lifts, and therefore wine is especially what we're looking for. So it could be that the rabbis wanted us to drink wine as part of the Seder. So that's the nature of the takana. We should drink wine. Now, why four? Why not six? Why not two? Why not one? Because, as we see, the four languages of Geula, there's this imagery of four. So therefore, since we have a mitzvah of drinking wine, we made it into four cups instead of one, instead of ten, instead of two. That's one way to look at it. A mitzvah of drinking wine, merged with four for the symbolism. Another perspective that some Acharonim discuss is wholly different. That it's not really about a mitzvah of drinking wine. And four is not necessarily prompted by the Lashonos of Geula like the Yerushalmi thinks. But maybe it's a whole different idea. That we know that when we have mitzvos that are brachos, or that are essentially speech, like Kiddush, like Havdalah, like benching sometimes. We want to make these brachos into something a little more formal. If it's just speech, sometimes people don't relate to it so seriously. And if we associate it with a cup of wine, so it becomes more of a ritual, becomes more of something formal. So we make Kiddush on wine, possibly for that, or possibly for other reasons. We make Havdalah on wine. You go to a wedding, the Sheva Brachas are recited on wine. Benching is often recited on wine. That's a way of making a bigger deal out of what's going on. So when we look at the Seder night, it happens to be that there are four mitzvos of speech. There are four things we do Pesach night that are centered around speech. We recite Kiddush. We recite the Haggadah. We recite Hallel. And we bench. Four mitzvot of speech. So perhaps Chazal asked, specifically Pesach night, that those mitzvot be recited al hakos. They be recited in the presence of wine. That often throughout the year it's a good idea to do these mitzvot in the presence of wine. But especially Pesach night, we insist on it with more stringency. And perhaps again, because of this aspect of freedom. That if you look, actually, I think the first Marim Makom here is a citation from the Gemara in Brachos. Number one, we won't go through the whole thing, but there the Gemara talks about the how Havdalah came to be recited al HaKos. That Havdalah, we know, is also integrated with Tfilas Ma'ariv. Atachanan Tanu is part of Shmoneh Esrei at Ma'ariv. And the Gemara talks about the whole process by which Havdalah came to be instituted al HaKos. So about the middle of this passage, I think it's four lines from the top. So it says, B'tchila kavua b'tfila. Originally it was only in davening. Hashiru kavu al HaKos. That when the Jews became a little bit more well off, and as Rashi, which is in Mar Mukum 2, explains, Hashiru liknos yayin. They were able to afford wine. So when they were at that stage of being well off, so then they instituted that Havdalah should be al HaKos. Then the Gemara goes on, Chazru Ve'anu, then they became poor again, so Kavua B'Tfila, it went back to being in Tfila. So you see from this Gemara that the association of a bracha with wine is often a function of how well off the Jewish people are. When they were well off, so then they made Havdalah al HaKos, and when they had a harder time, when they couldn't afford wine, so then they would recite the bracha without the kos. So if that imagery is there, that being able to recite a bracha al HaKos is not only beneficial to the bracha, but it helps to make a statement that we're well off, that we're comfortable, that we're not slaves. So then all the more so, Pesach night, we can understand that the rabbis wouldn't only recommend it, they would insist on it. That Pesach night, if no other time of the year, Pesach night is a time to have these mitzvot done halakos. So if that's the case, so it could be that really, it's not a mitzvah of drinking wine. It's a mitzvah of reciting brachos, of reciting speech-oriented mitzvot. And the way they should be done is al HaKos. Not the mitzvah isn't focused on drinking. The mitzvah is focused on reciting the brachos in the presence of a kos. And the four is not necessarily, and we'll discuss this more, is not necessarily because of the four lashonas of gula, but it's because we have four such mitzvahs, because there are four opportunities throughout the night in order to fulfill this concept. So in different ways, you find Achronim discussing these two possibilities, two different angles, really two very different formulations of how we have this practice of the four cups of wine, Pesach night. So how does that affect things? It affects a couple of halachic points that I'd like to just briefly go through some of the different ways, perhaps some of them may be more theoretical, some of them may be more practical, some of the different ways in which the halacha or the theory could be affected by these different possibilities. Some of them are discussed in the Brisker Rav Sefer, some of them aren't. A couple of ideas that come up in the context of this idea. So to begin with one idea that the Brisker Rav does mention, he talks about this Tosfos, Marim Makom number 3. So the Tosfos in the beginning of the 10th Parak of Psachim, which talks about an idea, which it throws out a suggestion which we don't see practiced in our homes, and it may be a good reason, as we'll see. But Tosfos presents the following suggestion, that the Mishnah there in Psachim tells us that even when somebody is taking their money from the public till, if somebody doesn't have enough money for a Suda, doesn't have enough to afford a Pesach meal, so he comes to the public Sukkah and he gets money from there. So the Mishnah says, this is true not only for the meal itself, but you should also ask for enough for the four cups of wine. That's also part of what you should ask for, which is a chiddush, and we'll talk about that more a little bit later if we have time, because normally there is a rule that positive mitzvos that are beyond your budget, that are too much for you to afford, so you're often exempt if they cost too much. So the idea that here, when it comes to a rabbinical concept, not even a mitzvah min HaTorah, and yet the Mishnah is saying, if you can't afford it, make sure you do afford it, make sure you go to the stock and get enough, that's a chiddush. It's a unique idea, which is probably a function of Persume Nisa, and maybe we'll talk about that a little bit later if we have time. But for now, the Mishnah tells us this din, that you should make sure you have the four cups of wine, and even if you have to ask for tzedakah, that's what you have to do. You've probably heard the famous story of the Beis Halevi in association with this. That, the Beis Halevi, the original Rabbi Yosher Ber Soloveitchik, the grandfather of the Soloveitchik from here, that Rabbi Yosher Ber Soloveitchik, the Beis Halevi, was approached by a woman who asked him the following shaila, that we know that the Gemara sometimes links milk with wine. That milk also makes you drowsy a little bit, makes you fall asleep. So it's a little bit intoxicating. So sometimes, for some purposes, the Gemara connects milk and wine. So this woman asked the Beis Halevi, if I have a hard time affording wine, maybe I could use milk for the four cups. So the Beis Halevi told her, no, it's better to use wine, and I'll give you some money to afford wine. So he reached into his pocket, and he gave her a lot more than the price of wine. So after she left, one of the students who was there said, Rebbe, I saw how much you gave her. It was a lot more than the price of wine. So what did he explain to her? That you have to look a little bit beyond the question, right? You have to have a little sensitivity to what's being presented. If this woman is asking if she can use milk for the Seder, so you can see that it's not only wine she can't afford. She can't afford meat either. She's not going to serve milk at her Seder if she's serving meat. So clearly she needs not only for wine, she needs for meat also, and he was able to perceive that. So that's why he gave her money for both meat and wine. But the question is prompted by this din in the Mishnah. This din tells you that not only for the meal itself, but even for the four cups of wine, you should make sure to be able to have in your possession. So working off of that concept, Satosis asks, well, maybe you don't have to go so far. Maybe if you have a household with 20 people in it, so you're going to think you're going to have to ask for 80 cups of wine. Maybe not. Maybe it's enough. We'll just have the head of the household have four cups of wine, like we see often with Kiddush. When it comes to Kiddush, sometimes everybody has wine, but not necessarily. Very often it's only the head of the household who will have wine. So let's do things the same way. Let's have the head of the household, he'll buy the four cups. Okay, so one person in the household should get the four cups of wine. And everyone else will listen the same way they listen to Kiddush. We have this mechanism of Shomea Ka'one, which means that everyone else can listen to one person reciting the bracha. So let's do things the same way Pesach night. Let's just have one set of four cups for the head of the household, and everyone else will hear. You don't have to look at the whole Tosfos. We won't go into it because it takes a lot of time. But you see, it's Mar Mukum 3. So the fourth line down is where Tosfos actually starts. So Tosfos raises this issue. Metocha Lashon Mashmiktas, from the language, it sounds a little bit, She'ein Nosin Levano V'Neveso, you don't have to necessarily give for all the members of the household. Kim La'atzmo, only the head of the household would necessarily have to do this. V'hu Motzi Es Kulam B'Shalo, and he will be able to fulfill the obligation on behalf of his whole family. U'svaruhu, when it makes sense, D'mayishna Abrakosis Mikiddish, the Chalashana. What's the difference between the four cups of wine Pesach night and Kiddush all year round? And then Tosfos goes in to talk about that. You see in the conclusion he's not so excited about this idea. But the implication you get, at least in theory, is that the Dalet Kosos can be fulfilled through Shemaya Ka'onen. We can treat it the same way you would treat Kiddush Friday night, where you would not necessarily insist on a full cup of wine, at least, for every participant at the meal. The Rambam, it's assumed, we disagree. It's not 100% explicit, but you do get that impression that the Rambam in his Mishnah Torah, which you see in the fourth source, in the middle of the top line, the kol echad v'echad, every single person in the house, bein hanoshim, bein noshim, chayiv lishtos b'layla hazar b'kos shel yayin. All the men and all the women have to drink the four cups of wine. Now, he doesn't explicitly address the possibility of Shemaya Ka'onah, but he doesn't seem to be too open to it either. So this is something the Brisker Rav discusses. And he observes, as many others do as well, that what you seem to have here is a machlokas about whether or not Shomea Ka'one, whether or not the Kiddush model, is relevant to the four cups of wine. And it could be that they argue along the lines of what we set up before. That maybe the Rambam understands that what is the obligation of four cups of wine? It's an obligation of drinking. It's an obligation to drink four cups of wine. So drinking is no connection to Shemei Ka'oneh. Shemei Ka'oneh is only for verbal mitzvahs. You can't do matzah through Shemei Ka'oneh. You can't do the sutta through Shemei Ka'oneh. You can't do a lulav through Shemei Ka'oneh. Shemei Ka'oneh only works for things that are statements, for things that are speech-oriented. So to say that the four cups of wine, if the mitzvah of drinking, should have any relationship to Shemei Ka'oneh is hard to understand. And that would seem to be the Rambam's view. While Tosus, who does entertain such a thought, maybe not so enthusiastically, but at least entertain such a thought, maybe Tosus understands that really the mitzvah is not drinking wine. The mitzvah is to say these four speech-oriented mitzvos, al hakos, that the four mitzvahs of speech should take place in the presence of wine. So if you're listening to somebody else who's doing it in the presence of wine, that counts for you as well. And the fact that you're not actually drinking it wouldn't necessarily matter. So it seems that that's a dispute here between Tosus and the Rambam, and that this could revolve around this issue of what is the nature of the obligation. Is it a mitzvah of drinking, or is it a mitzvah of reciting things in the presence of wine? It should be pointed out, again, that we don't see Shemei Ka'oneh being utilized, and it's important to note that even Tosus does not seem so enthusiastic about it. In the end of the comment, Tosus seems to backtrack from it a little bit. And some later Sfarim suggest, there's a Sefer of Responsa called Tshuvas, Hisorius Tshuva, has a discussion about this, in which he observes that it could be that Tosus never meant that the whole idea of the four cups of wine can really be fulfilled through Shemei Ka'oneh. It could just be that Tosus was just working off the idea of Persumei Nisa, that the Mishnah says, why do I have to go begging for four cups of wine? Because Persumei Nisa, publicizing the miracle, is such a pressing concern that even if I can't afford it, I have to go to great lengths to be able to do it. So if you have one set of four cups in the household, that will accomplish Persumei Nisa. So it could be that really the obligation of four cups of wine goes beyond this, requires more than Shemei Ka'oneh. But that's not so pressing that you have to go begging. Persumei Nisa is what makes you go begging. And Persumei Nisa you could accomplish through Shemei Ka'oneh. That one set of cups in the house would be enough. So again, it's a question how much Tosus is really behind this idea. But at least in theory, they seem to be ready to endorse Shemei Ka'oneh. And that could be a question of how we understand the nature of this obligation. Another question that we show in him also debate, and this you see in source number 5, and I think source number 6, is the question of how much do you have to drink? And here also it's the question of how do you view it. Tosus takes the view, we won't go into it inside too much because of this time, but Tosus over here in number 5 takes the view that the obligation of drinking is what we call mali lugmav, full volume of one side of the cheek. So we call mali lugmav. That's how much you have to drink out of the cups. And that's the concept that we have again by Kiddush. That's the requirement for Kiddush. Drinking from Kiddush has to be a mali lugmav. So when it comes to the four cups of wine, it's the same standard. While other Rishonim don't define it by that at all, other Rishonim define it by either, as the Rambam says, you see in Source 6, the last words of the Rambam in Source 6 in the last line, V'yimshasa mikol kos mehen rubo yasa. That out of every cup you have, you have to drink the majority of the cup. It's not defined by your cheek. It's defined by the size of the cup. You have to have the majority of the cup. And what you see here, again, may be a question of what is the nature of the mitzvah. That according to the Rambam, consistent with what we saw a minute ago, the mitzvah is to drink a cup of wine. So it's not based on your cheek. It's based on a cup of wine. And we have a principle of rubo kekulo. Rove is enough. The majority is enough. So you drink the majority of a cup. That's called a cup. While Tosus sees it more in the context of Kiddush, the cup is really there to enhance the bracha, and you taste from the cup in order that the cup should have a role, so therefore that's mali lugmav, that's a cheekful, it's not defined based on the size of the cup. So this disagreement between Tosus and the Rambam may be the same issue, the same question of do we see it as a function of drinking a cup, and therefore we'll look at it based on a cup standard, or do we see it as a function of enhancing the bracha, like Kiddush, and therefore we'll use Kiddush rules and that's the view of Tosus? Just to give another example of how this question could come up, there was a contemporary posek, passed away a few years ago, his name is Rav Schnellberg, he's a Rav in London. In his Shuvas, he discusses the following question. that we know that there's an obligation to say Yal V'Yavo in benching on Yontif. Certainly Pesach night is an obligation to say Yal V'Yavo in benching. And if one forgets Yal V'Yavo, so one has to repeat benching. That's a halacha that applies to men and to women. That's something that's explicitly pointed out, because Pesach night, there's an obligation of eating bread, obligation of eating matzah, and the Gemara says that whenever Yal V'Yavo is there as an obligatory meal, if you have to have that meal, if you forget it, you have to go back and say benching again. So that's to the din. If you forget to say Yal V'Yavo on Pesach night, you have to bench again. So Schnellberg raised the question, so should you say it with another kos? So is the idea that the benching is supposed to be done ala kos? Or is the idea that it's four kosos of wine independent of the mitzvos? So if that's the idea, maybe you should repeat benching with a kos, if that's the first of the possibility. That's the question he discusses, he's not sure about, which also seems to flow out of this question. Okay, so there is another interesting idea, more conceptual in nature, that takes us to another aspect of the discussion, that you see, I think this is in source number 7, that the Gemara talks about, in the middle, toward the end of this first line in source number 7, Amar of Yehud, Amar Shmuel, etc., to go to the end, Shasa'an bevas achas. What if you mix them all together into one? And then the Gemara concludes that the status of mixing them all together into one, the last lines of this source, the last four words, Yidei arba kosos lo yatsa. Yidei yayin yatsa, to go back a few words, Yidei arba kosos lo yatsa. That you fulfill something, you don't fulfill the four cups of wine. Now, first of all, there is a disagreement in Rishonim. What does that mean to mix them all up into one? How do you mix up all the four kosos into one? So Rashi says, what does it mean? It means you take a big cup, and you take your four cups, and you pour it into one very high glass, and you have one cup that has four cups worth. So the Rashbam, Rashi's grandson, he writes over there, he says, why is that even called four cups anymore? There's no maximum shear to a cup. So if I have the world's biggest cup, and I fill it to the top, it's still only called one cup. It doesn't matter that it holds the equivalent of 100 cups. So if I mix four cups into one, that's not four cups, that's one. So why would the Gemara even talk about that? That's one cup of wine. So it must mean, basachas means you have four cups, but you drink them in a row without worrying at all about the order of the Seder that they're normally associated with. So both of those scenarios are suggested for mixing them up into one, which the Gemara says is partially valuable, but not doesn't really accomplish what you're trying to do. So we see from the different concerns of Rashi and the Rashbam that they reflect these two different possibilities. Right? That Rashi's idea is that four kosos of wine should be drinking wine in four different slots because of four lashonos of gula. So therefore, if you mix them into one, you lose that. You miss the aspect of four. While the Rashbam says, no, there's nothing to even talk about as far as that's concerned, because that would all be one cup. But the issue is that the four cups should be associated with the different brachos and different statements throughout the night. And if you do them in order, right away, if you do them in a row, without putting them in the right place, so that's what we're losing, and that's what the Gemara is concerned about. So you see what the different concerns are, again, reflect these two possibilities. Is it that we want to preserve four cups, or is it that we want to preserve the four slots of the four cups, because of what the cups do for the brachas? So, in any event, according to both cases, you see that there is a split, that you can fulfill solid kosas without fulfilling wine. And that indicates also something that the Svarim talk about, that you see from this and other statements in the Gemara, that there is apparently an extra component to this mitzvah, which we indicated at the beginning, that there is this aspect of cheirus, that we have to not only fulfill the technical obligation, but that we have to also bring to it a component of freedom to show that we're happy and that we're free and that we're not slaves, and that that's also integrated into the obligation. So just to discuss that a little bit briefly, so that affects a number of practical points as well. One issue in which there's no safe side, because there are opinions on both extremes in the recent contemporary authorities, what appears to be a machlokas between Rav Moshe Feinstein and the Rav of Soloveitchik, at least the way they are quoted by later sources, has to do with somebody who doesn't enjoy wine. If you don't like wine, this is a very practical issue, the issue of grape juice. So it says in Shulchan Aruch that if wine gives you a headache, so you still have to drink wine. And that's based on a Gemara which talks about one of the Amoraim who said that he would drink wine at the Seder and he'd have a headache between Pesach and Shavuos. The whole time he would have a major hangover. But still, apparently, he drank wine anyway. So it sounds like from that even if you're somebody who doesn't like wine, so then maybe you have to drink wine anyway. And that was the view that Rav Moshe Feinstein is quoted as having. That Rav Moshe Feinstein is quoted not directly in his Shuvas, but a number of other Svarim have this idea in the Kol Dodi Haggadah of Rav David Feinstein. You have this idea quoted, that Rav Moshe felt that the mitzvah required, because of this Cheirus idea, because we have to show how we're free, it has to be something intoxicating. And therefore, even if you don't like it, that's what it has to be. And many other Achronim apparently felt differently. And Rav Soloveitchik is quoted by Rabbi Shechter in the Nefesh HaRav, and many other major poskim, such as the Chazon Ish and the Shabin HaRav, one of the prominent figures of Torah and Eretz Yisrael in the 50s, are all quoted as either allowing grape juice or having used grape juice themselves at the Seder, and apparently feeling just the opposite, that Cheirus means that you have to enjoy it. If it makes you miserable, and you're forced to drink something that makes you miserable, that's the opposite of Cheirus. So how do you deal with the fact that Shulchan Aruch and the Gemara seem to say that even if you get a headache, you're supposed to drink it anyway? So presumably that means you're going to get a headache the next day. You're going to get a headache for all of Sfira, you're going to be miserable. But Pesach night, you're going to feel free. So that's why a lot of people drink even though they have headaches the next day, because they enjoy it at the moment. But then there are also people who don't enjoy drinking ever. And that even when they're drinking it, they don't find it to be a positive experience. So then maybe that's not what the Shulchan Aruch is talking about. Maybe it only means if you enjoy it now and you'll have a headache later, you should still drink now. But if you don't like it when you're drinking it, so then maybe it doesn't represent Cheirus to you. So again, that's an issue which you can't really, if you're in the category of people who don't drink wine, there's no way to satisfy all the opinions here, because Rav Moshe would apparently believe that you have to drink wine anyway, and the Rav and many others would apparently say, no, that's the opposite of Cheirus. Cheirus means you have to feel free, and if you're forced to drink something that makes you miserable, so then that's not going to really have this component of Cheirus to it. You find this idea perhaps reflected in a couple of other sources as well. The Rishalmi discusses the question of whether or not you can use Shemitah wine for Dalet Kosos. And the Gemara concludes that you can use Shemitah wine. But the commentaries on the side of the Rishalmi explain that perhaps the issue is that sometimes in Halacha we require lachem. We require that the object that you're using has to be something that you own. This is an idea that we find most prominently in the context of Lulav and Esrog. Lulav and Esrog, at least the first day of Sukkot, has to be owned by the individual using them. And if it's not owned, there's a big lack there. It requires lachem, lakakim lachem. Actually a big question in Poskim whether this is such a standard by matzah also. Do you have to own your own matzah? Which brings all kinds of fun issues about eating at other people's houses. Is there an issue of requiring ownership of the matzah? But that's an issue you sometimes find in Halacha, that sometimes there's a need not only for you to use an object in order to fulfill the mitzvah, but sometimes you have to own it as well. So the commentary on the side of the Yerushalmi says that was the question the Yerushalmi wanted to know. That maybe the reason you can't, maybe you might think you can't fulfill Dalet Kosos with Shvius wine is because there are limitations on what you can do with it. You can't sell it. You can't waste it. There are restrictions on how you can use this wine. And maybe if there are restrictions, maybe that's not called owning it. If you can't do whatever you want with it, so then maybe that's not called Lachem. And maybe you need Lachem. So why should you need that? So one contemporary postmaker, Rav Nachman Gestetner, writes in his Shuvas that maybe the issue is that wine has to represent freedom. And if you're not free, if you can't do whatever you want, so then there's something lacking in the Dalet Kosos. Maybe that was the issue that Yerushalmi was thinking about. And we'll just mention one more issue about that. That we indicated earlier that the Mishnah requires us to go begging for Dalet Kosos of wine if we can't afford it, which is a surprising idea, because in general, the Gemara tells us elsewhere, the Gemara says in Maseches Ksubos, that at least for positive mitzvos, or Gemara is talking a different context, but the Sifrei Halacha understand this is talking about positive mitzvos. If it's going to cost more than a fifth of the money you already have, you don't have to do it. You don't have to spend more than a fifth of the money you already have. So certainly, if it's beyond all the money you already have, and you have to go begging, so you certainly don't have to do that. So the idea that you have to beg for four cups of wine, when it's not even a biblical mitzvah, it's a mitzvah of the Rabbanan, so that's very surprising, and that's itself a whole discussion why that should be. That's a separate discussion. But it's also surprising, because we know when it comes to Shabbos meals, so the Gemara says elsewhere in the context of Shabbos, that you shouldn't necessarily go to such great lengths, depending on other people, for a fancier meal, The Gemara says, "Asei Shabbos Chachol v'al Tistarech Labrius." You should make your Shabbos into a more weekday type meal, rather than put yourself upon the community in order to support you. So it would seem this would be a similar concept. So to say that you should go begging for the four cups of wine would be something very surprising. So apparently the idea is that since it's supposed to represent your freedom, it's supposed to represent your chayrus, this isn't something we could do without. That this transcends that idea, that this is so crucial to the experience that we're talking. That's the way Rav Farbstein was Rashi Ibn Chevron, as in the Sefer Knesset Avram, he explains like that, that that's the idea of begging for the dalakosos, it becomes a crucial part of the experience. So what does all of this show us? So you see that we have this idea of four cups of wine, and the four cups of wine represent cheres, and there are two possible ways in which it can manifest that, that either it comes out as an obligation of drinking to represent cheres, and four because of the four lashonas of gula, or it comes out that it's an obligation to do mitzvahs of speech with the wine, and then the four would seem to be the four mitzvahs of speech. So if we say that way, if we say that it's the four mitzvahs of speech, so are we totally removed from the idea of four lashonas of gula? Have we walked away from that idea? So it could be, maybe not. The Meshech Chachma, in his commentary to Shmos, he associates the two ideas. He finds a linkage between the four lashonas of gula and the four mitzvahs of speech that we say at the Seder night. Although he defines it a little bit differently. He doesn't break it down the way we did before. He breaks it down as Kiddush and benching in two halves of Hallel. He doesn't identify Haggadah as one of the four mitzvahs. But he draws a parallelism between the Lashonos of Geula and these mitzvahs. And he writes, in each case, there is a joint effort between the Jews and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, for example, the Hotzeisi. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out from Galus, took us out from exile. So if we want HaKadosh Baruch Hu to take us out, so we also have to remove ourselves. We have to distinguish ourselves. So the mitzvah of kiddush, of sanctifying, of setting aside holiness, that is a way of setting aside ourselves. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu responds by setting us aside as well. And then we want Hotzeisi v'hitzalti, God should save us from other forces. So if we want God should save us from other forces, we have to make sure we're not going to hurt ourselves. We're not going to fight amongst ourselves. So why would we fight each other? We fight each other because you feel there's not enough to go around. You feel like there's scarce resources, and we have to challenge each other. So therefore, the expressions of plenty that we say in Berachas HaMazon, that we recognize that we're okay, that we recognize that we're in good shape, that helps to make sure we're not going to fight ourselves, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu can make sure nobody else will fight us either. And so too, the last two Lashonos of Gula, V'ga'alti, V'lakachti, He will redeem us, make us into a nation, and then bring us to Har Sinai. So that, the Neshech Chachma explains, correlates to two different halves of Hallel, where we talk about our past and we talk about our future. We recognize ourselves as a distinct nation with a history and with a hope, with a future. And we recognize ourselves that way. HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes and joins us the other half, and V'ga'alti, V'lakachti. So you see from the Meshech Chachma a pattern where really these two ideas merge, and where really the idea seems to be that redemption requires of us that we meet God halfway, that we express ourselves in a certain way, and that God comes and meets us and matches the effort. So we distinguish ourselves, God takes us out of exile. We make sure not to fight amongst ourselves, God protects us from enemies. We take the first step, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes and meets us the next way. So this is very interesting, because there is also, the Gemara discusses, this is something we don't often see, the Gemara discusses that really there should be a fifth cup. And the Gemara says in the end of Maseches Psachim that there is a fifth cup which is optional. Very strange idea. And it's brought in Sefer Halacha that there's a fifth cup that's a rishus, that's an option. So why should there be such an idea? What does this represent? So the Ravid writes, if you look in the Psukim, so there is a fifth verb, the Hevesi. That maybe the Hevesi is represented by the fifth cup, and for some reason, then that would be the optional cup. But the Nitziv, in his commentary, the Hemek Dover, the Nitziv suggests maybe it's not the Hevesi. Maybe it's something else. Maybe it's the Pasuk that's even earlier within these words. It's in the same Pasuk. The Pasuk says, V'yedatem es Hashem, that you will come to know God. And perhaps the reason that that one is optional is because not everyone is privileged, not everyone is successful in that. That this idea that we should get to this fifth cup, that we should follow the themes of all the four cups and meet HaKadosh Baruch Hu halfway to fully get the realization, so that when we get to the fifth cup, we've reached the state of Yadatim Es Hashem. That's the goal, but we're not always all there. So this fifth cup is optional. It represents what we aspire to. That perhaps if we're able to follow this imagery, if we're able to meet HaKadosh Baruch Hu halfway in all the stages of redemption, and to fully integrate into our consciousness all of this imagery, then we'll all be privileged to this fifth cup of Yadatim Es Hashem. So just maybe we'll quickly review what we spoke about. So we spoke about the fact that there is an obligation Pesach night to the four cups of wine. It's one of the only obligations at Pesach night that is purely rabbinical, not rooted at all in biblical concepts, even though many of the other mitzvot b'zman hazeh may be rabbinical. And we discussed the question of, on the one hand, the Yerushalmi tells us that this is based on the four lashonos of Geula, Votzeisti v'salti v'galti v'lakachti, and the Mordechai asks, well then why don't we have four pieces of meat? And the Netziv writes, because each wine represents ascension, and each one of these words represents a new level. And the Ramban writes what the levels are. V'hotzeisi, we were taken out of slavery, we were made free, we were brought, the Mitzvim were dealt with, and we were brought to Sinai, four different stages represented by the four Lashonas. And then we mentioned the question that Achronim asked, how do we relate to this mitzvah of the four cups of wine? Is it basically a mitzvah of drinking wine? And it's a mitzvah to do it four times because of the four lashonos of Geula? Or is it that the four speech mitzvahs that we do Pesach night should be done al hakos, in reflection of the idea that when we're more well off, so mitzvahs are more likely to be done al hakos. So therefore, since that's the theme Pesach night, so Chazal insisted that all the four brachas of Letzei Haggadah and Kiddush and Benching and Hallel should be done al hakos. We mentioned various ramifications of how you looked at it. We mentioned that Tosfos seems to entertain the possibility of Shemaya Ka'oneh by these four kosos, that maybe only the Balabayas has to have, and everyone else can listen just like Kiddush, and the Rambam doesn't seem to be too into this, and it could be this is the question. The Rambam believes the mitzvah of drinking, and therefore Shemaya Ka'oneh is completely irrelevant, while the Tosfos could perhaps see that it's a mitzvah of reciting speech mitzvos on alakos, and therefore someone listening to that could also acquire the idea of alakos through Shemaya Ka'oneh. And we mentioned Tosfos himself wasn't so excited about it, and it could be, as later Achronim suggests, that it's only the Pirsumei Nisa that's accomplished through that, but maybe even Tosfos would agree that the concept of four kosos would not be accomplished by that. And then we discussed the other issue, the question of how much do you have to drink. So we saw Tosfos said it's only a cheekful you have to drink, and the Rambam said it has to be most of a kos. So the question of the standard, again, depends on what is the mitzvah. The mitzvah to drink a kos, in which case rubo kakulo, most of it counts, or is a mitzvah like Kiddush, and Kitzvah Kiddush, the rule is Mali Bugmav, and that should be enough. And we discussed the question that the Shraga HaMeir of Schnellberg raised in his Chuvis, what if you forget to say Alviyava when benching on Seder night, and you have to repeat benching, so should you repeat it a la kos or not? Does that bring an extra kos into the equation? Is it for the mitzvah of benching, or is it a separate concept? I wasn't sure about that. And then we talked about when the Gemara says that if you mix them all into one, so you accomplish something, but you don't accomplish everything. So we talked about two different versions in Rishonim about what it means to mix it all into one. Rashi says he mixed it all into one big cup, and the Rashbam says that makes no sense because that's only going to be one cup no matter how you look at it, so it must mean you have four separate cups, but you drink them in a row. And we showed how those two concerns reflect, is the issue to have four, or is the issue to have them placed in the right place? And in any event, the Gemara seems to distinguish between fulfilling Yayin, but not fulfilling the Dalet Kosos, and then we looked a little bit at that extra idea, this idea of Cheres, and how that may affect the Halacha in some ways, how we had a Machlokas, if somebody doesn't like wine, can he drink grape juice or not? How Rav Moshe is quoted as saying that it has to be intoxicating or else it doesn't accomplish the goal of Cheres, and how many other prominent Achronim, including the Rav, thought that maybe that the opposite is true, that if you don't like drinking wine, then it's the opposite of Cheres, and you have to have grape juice, so there's no way to satisfy both opinions. And we talked about the Suffolk in Yerushalmi, about whether or not you can use Shemitah wine for the Dalet Kosos, and the Yerushalmi concludes that you can, and the commentaries explain because it might be an issue of lachem. Maybe you have to own the wine, and maybe that's not called owning if you can't do whatever you want with it. And there's, Rav Nathan Gestetner explained, it was an issue of cheres again. And then we talked also about this idea of begging for wine, and even that seems to transcend the requirements for other mitzvot, and even by Shabbos we don't find this idea. So perhaps again, maybe the role of cheres makes it more mandatory than we would normally find. And then we talked about the question of if we take this view that it's patterned after the mitzvos as opposed to the four lashonos of geula, did that take us out of the four lashonos geula equation completely? And we saw the Meshech Chachma, who didn't necessarily see it that way. The Meshech Chachma thought there was a link between the two, even though he arranged it differently. He saw the four mitzvos as kiddush, benching the two halves of Hallel, and he pointed out that at each stage there was an equal effort that we sanctify ourselves, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu takes us out of galus. We make sure not to fight amongst ourselves, and we express in benching that we're happy. So Kadosh Baruch Hu protects us. We acknowledge our past and our future, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu fulfills Vigalti Vilakachti with us. And then we discussed the fact that there is a reference in the Gemara to a fifth coast, and the Sefer Halacha quotes this as an optional coast. And the Ravid says this is representing the word of the Hevesi. And we mentioned that it's his idea, which was different, that perhaps the idea is that Sviyadata Mes Hashem, which is also included in the Sukkim, that we shall know God, and that maybe together with the Meshech Chachma's idea that we see that the Seder requires us to have an equivalent effort to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing for us, we have to meet him halfway. And maybe not everyone accomplishes this, but those of us who are, able to reach that point can be zoche to the fifth coast of Yedat and Mitzvah Hashem. And it should be our bracha that this Pesach we should all feel obligated towards the fifth coast. Have a wonderful Yontif.